I found out when I wrote that book that the main mission of the banks was to start wars. And I found out also that it's very difficult to start a war. If you want to start a war with Iraq, go out and try to do it. It's very tough. And it takes years of hard work. So Bush had a great advantage because his father was head of the Central Intelligence Agency and a worldwide drug distribution operation. So he had plenty of money and plenty of political influence. He had no problem at all to walk into Iraq, although Iraq had never fired a shot at the United States. You see, you declare war on another country when they invade your country and try to take your territory. There has to be some very good reason to have a war, because you can understand that it's very difficult to get millions of people to run out and kill each other when they have absolutely no bone of contention whatsoever. In fact, all the wars have had... See, Ezra, that's why Ezra got into this entire thing, and that's how he got me into it. He was living in Paris during World War I, and he had many young writers and artist friends who were drafted into the armies, and some were for Germany and some were for France, and they were killed. And he couldn't understand how these great talents, very brilliant young men, died for nothing. And when he spent years of studying the situation in 8 languages all over Europe, he found out that bankers make wars to create debt. And that's the only reason. And that's the only reason. We went to war against Germany in World War I and World War II at a time when by census, 52% of the population of the United States was of German origin. So this is like a civil war.
Amazing.
In fact, the Constitutional Convention failed by one vote to make German the official language of the United States in the 1780, because it missed by one vote, because the predominant population of the country was German. Although it was settled by the English and the French, the English and the French were both too aristocratic to go and live in the desert, a wild country like the United States. And so when Rothschild hired the Hessian troops to battle the American colonists, who were English colonists, and King George III realized that the American colonists would not fight against their British brothers, who were troops from George III from England. And so he had to go to Germany and hire the Hessian troops, who were mercenary troops. And the payment for that rent of these troops became the Rothschild was the agent for that. That was his first start towards world power. He made so much money out of the Hessian troops. So there was another consequence. All of these German troops declined to return to Germany, because they had a whole continent here that they had their pick of. Why should they go back to Germany, where every inch of land was owned by somebody already, and you could only get it if you bought it, and it was very expensive. And they could stay in the United States and have 1,000 acres of very good land for nothing. So of course they all stayed. I mean, you can't beat a bargain like that anywhere.
Does Israel control the foreign policy of the United States?
Israel completely controls the United States. In fact, Ariel Sharon, the president of Israel, has said that repeatedly publicly. It's very seldom picked up by the press. But he says the United States will do anything we tell them to. Not ask them to, but tell them to. When Zionism was first proposed in the early 1920s, you see, during World War I, they got the Balfour Declaration for a national home for Israel, and that was pushed through the British Parliament by Lord Rothschild. And because it was such a raw deal, because nobody in the world wanted a national home for the Jews, particularly the Jews, because they lived very well as a parasitic people all over the world, and they didn't particularly look forward to the idea of being confined to one country, which of course they never have done. And so most of your prominent Jews, including Jacob Schiff of Kuhn Loeb Company, who bankrolled the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. Jacob Schiff, from 1920 to 1926, was an outspoken anti-Zionist. He believed that it would be suicidal for the Jewish people to have a national home, which of course they would have to be loyal to, as opposed to the freedom that they enjoyed, which was to be a citizen of every nation in the world, which was ideal for what they wanted to do.
Can Zionists destroy the world?
The Zionists have brought the world to the brink of total destruction, economic and natural resources and everything else. You see the skyrocketing price of oil and the skyrocketing price of real estate in the United States. This is an activity which can't go on at this pace long in a few weeks more, and everything's going to totally collapse. So wiser heads, of which are very few, realize that you can't keep going like this. But the bankers and the people who are making the money wanted to keep going like this, because when you're making trillions of dollars, you don't want to quit. It's an addiction. And so they'll keep letting this go on a few more months and see what turns up. There is a revolution going on in the world today, which is actually the world turning. As the world turns, it goes to a certain phase and another phase and another phase. And that's where we are now. Everything is changing, but we can't see it because it's not a day-to-day change. But there is. Well, the Internet was one example, because under the Internet, people like myself, which have all media totally closed, television, newspapers, and yet I've become an internationally known writer just by doing it myself. It can be done. So things are not static. Things are less static than they've ever been. And I look for, right now, you see you have a new generation coming up every 20 years. And that new generation wants to make itself felt. They want to make its presence known. And so every 20 years you're facing an utter revolution, because the 20-year generation, many of them from wealthy families or from prominent families and have some stature in themselves, and many others are totally penniless and have no background whatsoever. But they create a place for themselves. I started my own publishing company because they told me on Wall Street that they couldn't print my book because the banks would close them down on Monday morning. So I found a child psychologist who would publish my Federal Reserve book. So it can be done. And the publishing media and communications are advancing at a very breathless rate. So you don't know what they're coming up with in the next 6 months. Don't forget they put a bill through Congress to control the Internet, and it was ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, because it was totally unconstitutional. There was no justification for it forever. The Supreme Court represents the occupation government, because the government is always an occupation government representing somebody else. The government does not represent the American people, because the democracy is supposed to be representative government. Now, Washington today does not represent any American, except in a very tenuous way.
Was 9/11 an inside job?
100%. What I called it publicly, and I was quoted in the New York Times after 9/11, I said it's a typical government operation. And I don't know anybody that said it better. And that appeared in the New York Times in the Frank Rich column. And Frank Rich printed it, but he didn't offer any rebuttal.
Is it a United States government job, or is it a Zionist inside job?
Well, it's more a Zionist inside job. Okay. Because the Zionism is the government in Washington. Everybody knows that.
So the United States government is controlled by Zionists.
Yes. Well,